broadcasting in English.
Hello and welcome to this weekend edition of Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. Starting off an excellent program for today, David Vaughan brings us a multilingual experience with poet Kateřina Rudchenková in Czech books. After that, we'll visit the town of Litoměřice in Spotlight. And later on in our program, another trip through the Czech radio archives. All that ahead, so please stay tuned. What happens when five women poets writing in five different languages meet on the edge of a Hungarian lake? As we find out now in Czech books, the experience can offer rich insights into what different languages and cultures have in common and where they differ. David Vaughan talks to the poet Kateřina Rudchenková.
In April, a group of women poets took part in a workshop to translate each other's work. The project was funded by the International Visegrad Fund that groups the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary and Poland, so it is no surprise that the event had a strong Central European flavour. One of the participants was the Prague poet Kateřina Rudchenková, and a few days ago we met to discuss this experiment in poetry translation. I also took the opportunity to ask Kateřina about her own career as one of the most acclaimed younger Czech poets.
I started to write poetry when I was 7, but seriously, I started to write when I was a teenager. But then I tried theatre plays and prose writing.
Which you, in fact, do to this day, don't you? You still write poetry, prose and theatre and plays.
Yes, I'm trying to write everything at the same time.
And where do you feel most at home? I have the feeling that you're basically a poet, aren't you?
I don't know.
Certainly your poetry has been very much praised, hasn't it? I mean, you've been compared with your use of language. You've been compared with Beckett, for example, which is a compliment to any writer.
That's true. But I would be also happy if I'm compared to Beckett as a playwright.
Well, let's start with one of your poems. And you're going to read us one now. Could you tell us a little bit about it?
I wrote it when I was in Caribbean, sitting by the seashore, and it was so exciting.
So it's about as un-Czech a context as you can possibly have, the beach, the sea.
It is about Czech desire for the ocean, yes.
And you're going to read it now, it's a short poem, and you're going to read it now in Czech.
Slavila jsem život na pobřeží, v příboji vzrušení a slunce, zdírali mi z těla dávnou zahořklost. Mé sny se přitom opíraly o kameny a splývaly mi po slabých prstech v bílé pěně. Mezi stehny se mi zvedalo moře jako ohňostroj a trsy šneků přisáté k útesu seděly pevně po mém boku. Nebyla jsem ve vlnách sama. Zálivem hýbal příští čas. Hebké tkanivo vody vědělo o mé krvi.
And now let's hear the same poem in English translation.
By the shore I celebrated life in excitable spume and sun, sloughing my body of old bitterness. As dreams leaned on stone, flowed to my weak fingers in white foam, between my thighs rose sea. Its fireworks and snails' clumps stuck to cliff, clamped firm beside me. In waves, I wasn't alone. The bay moved with what will be, and the smooth-webbed water knew my blood.
And that poem was in an English translation by another poet, Claire Pollard, who's an English poet, and it's actually the translation came into being as part of a broader project, didn't it?
It was a project called Visegrad Poetess. It was a translating project initiated by Hungarian university professor Eva Karadi together with Hungarian poet Anna Szabó. We came to Balatonfüred. It's a small town at the bank of Lake Balaton.
But not quite like the Caribbean scene you just described, but still a very beautiful spot.
Yes, also very beautiful, not so moving as ocean, but... And we stayed there for 3 days. Besides me, it was Katarina Kucbelová from Slovakia and Anna Sabo from Hungary, then Agnieszka Wolny-Chamkalo from Poland, and then English poet Claire Pollard. We stayed there for 3 days, and we brought each of us 3 poems in original and English versions, and we translated every poem into our languages.
And I can imagine that that could work quite easily and very interestingly between Czech, Slovak and Polish, because the 3 languages have a lot in common. But with Hungarian or English, it's really a much bigger leap, isn't it?
Paradoxically, it was quite difficult for me to translate Slovak poem, because it's so similar, the languages, that I had to check almost every word if by chance this single word isn't slightly with different meaning. With Hungarian, I don't understand it at all. I could only translate it by use of English, so it was somehow easier.
And were you able to talk to the poet, to Anna Sabo, and to say, well, this is what it says in English, in Hungarian, does it have a slightly different meaning? Are there sort of shifts in the meaning here?
Yes, we discuss almost every word, explaining what we meant. So I think it's quite precise, this result.
So maybe if you could just read the first verse of one of the poems by Anna Sabo, the Hungarian poet who took part in Czech. And then we'll hear it in English translation once again by Claire Pollard.
Čarodejnická píseň. Vždycky, když slyšíš šumění listí, duj větře, duj, ať nikdo tě nevidí, stoupni si na střechu, rozpust si vlasy, duj větře, nikdo tě nevidí.
Witch chant. If you hear in the leaves there's a roar, blast wind, don't let them see. On the roof stand and undo your hair, blast wind, nobody sees. If the wind grabs at hands of the leaves, blast wind, don't let them see. And the petals of meadows drift loose, blast wind, nobody sees. If the dark, if it swells, if a groan, blast wind, don't let them see. You will feel the wind bang on your bones, blast wind, nobody sees. Let it bring what it brings, let it snatch, fly wind, don't let them see. You will fall to a wind that will catch, fly, fly. Nobody sees.
When you translate a poem like that, does it in a way become your own?
Yes, definitely. It was quite difficult to translate, for example, Anna Sabo poems, because they are so different from what I'm writing, because she uses a lot of rhymes and rhythm quite often. I was like struggling poet and translator in myself, but I had to be truthful to what they wrote, but I was fighting the temptation of correcting their poems because I would write it in different way. But at the end, I was so satisfied with it that I really feel like I wrote it myself.
And what about the other way around with your poems? When you saw them in English or Slovak or Polish, you could probably more or less see what they'd done with your poems. In Hungarian it'd be a bit more difficult because it's such a different language. Were there times when you're thinking, oh, that's not quite what I wanted to say? Or were there times when you thought perhaps, oh, I wish I'd said it that way?
What was interesting, what Anna Sabo said when she was translating one of my poems, and there is this quite erotic image, and she said that in Hungarian context it would sound too strong. So she asked me if she could change it, because there is a verse like milostné přirážení, something like thrusts of love. I don't know if...
Thrusts of love, I suppose, yes.
And she was afraid to use this term, so she used like hitting of marriage bed to a wall, which is probably more...
It's a kind of... It's slightly more euphemistic.
Yes. But I like it too.
And I noticed with the English translation of your poems that, I mean, so much in the Czech works through the grammar, because Czech is such a wonderfully complex grammatical language that your poetry sort of implies so much through the cases. And when we were looking at one of your poems just before we started recording, there's one poem where there's this masculine plural ending on a verb, which implies that there's something masculine plural outside the poem that we don't know about. And it's impossible, isn't it, to get that sort of thing into English, which is in a sense a more pedestrian language, isn't it?
It is. It's true that during the workshop I got a little bit depressed from how much must be necessarily disappeared.
What do you think is the main thing to be gained from workshops like this?
During those days I got a deep respect to translators, especially poetry translators, because it's so difficult and almost invisible work. At the same time, I thought that maybe this is the only way how to make poetry translations, to consult every verse and never without the author.
And I think the time has come to hear another of your poems, Popel a Slast, translated into English as Ash and Lust. We'll hear it in English.
Ash and Lust. We're covered by death's calm. Mist over forest, slow talk, a slow walk, us. Nights together, you listen for breathing, watch a face sunk in the brain's floating thought. Everything open consoles, land, sky, surface of lake or sea. Sinking into you, rapture, lightning, rising on hand and knee. For a long time you haven't known if it's bliss that gasps, or a groan, the thud of steps behind a coffin from love's thrusts.
So there's the poem with the love's thrusts, which unfortunately Hungarian readers will never find out about.
Yes.
So this workshop took place in the spring. Are you planning further such projects? Because it seems such a great idea. Also, the idea of translating poetry not just from smaller languages to the big languages like English and German, but also between languages that are spoken by smaller numbers of people. It seems such a great idea. Are you going to take this further?
Yes, there were already several presentations of this project. We were in Brno, in Krakow, even on the boat from Bratislava to Vienna. And there will be also in Bratislava and next year in Krems in Austria. So we are gathering often and reading these translations.
And to end, do you think that people are still in Czech Republic today and in Central Europe today? You've been working with other poets from Central Europe. Do you think that people are still seeking poetry and looking for poetry and reading poetry and buying poetry? Do you think there is still a wide appeal, as there was before the fall of communism?
Not for mass readerships. There will always be readers of poetry, but mainly in the circle of poets themselves. But it's enough for me.
And it's important for the language, isn't it?
Yes, I think poetry is a place where language can be free somehow and more rich than in this mass media or bureaucracy or, I don't know, newspaper language.
Kateřina Rudčenková, thank you very much indeed for coming to talk to us at Radio Prague.
Thank you.
David Vaughan there, talking to poet Kateřina Rudčenková. If you're just tuning in, then thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name's Christian Falvey, and next up on our program, another edition of Spotlight, on this occasion brought to you by reporter extraordinaire Jan Wellinger.
The North Bohemian town of Litoměřice, has long enjoyed the reputation of being one of the Czech Republic's most beautiful sites. Founded roughly 1,000 years ago, Litoměřice lies in one of the Czech Republic's hilliest ranges, on the confluence of the Elbe and Ohře rivers. The town's beginnings were originally a Slavonic fort overseeing a number of small municipalities, later replaced by a castle and the emerging town in the 11th century. Oldřich Doskočil is a local historian who has lived in Litoměřice most of his life.
Těžko určit, kdy vlastně bylo konstituováno nějakým přesným datem.
We can't set an exact date for the founding of Litoměřice, but we do know that its beginnings reach back to the nearby Domský vrch, or Dome Hill, the site of a castle that was important under Bohemia's premised rulers. The castle included an early Romanesque church, which later fell under ruins. They did recover a piece at the archaeological site, an original tile, featuring a well-known and recognizable symbol of Christianity, two fish bound by a ribbon.
In 1057, Litoměřice was given a chapter of the Church of St. Stephen, increasing its importance.
Již bylo v té době několik osad. Dodnes se nám podle nich jmenují...
Gradually, the town grew. Across the valley, there were several settlements, later given names like Zasada, Kotsanda, Rybarže, and Nové Město, the new town. They eventually came together and by 1260 formed the early medieval settlement. Arguably, the most interesting activities continued to take place on the periphery, especially in the Zasada district. It has the feel of a village within a city, even today. In medieval times, it was increasingly settled by foreign merchants, Arabs, Slavs from the Balkans, German speakers. Litoměřice gained a true multi-ethnic character.
Litoměřice začínají už dostávat takový ten mezinárodní charakter.
Under the Přemyslids, Litoměřice and its castle were vital and remained important under the Luxembourgs. Fortifications and an additional castle were built on its western flank at the command of King Charles IV, who visited Litoměřice on three occasions. Charles granted the town the nearby hill of Radobíl for the foundation of a royal vineyard. Wine production in the area lasted up to the second half of the 19th century, when landslides destroyed the vineyard. I asked Oldřich Doskočil if any records describing the wine's taste had survived.
Well, it was said to be among the very best in the country. It wouldn't be wise to criticize the king's wine. I wouldn't. On the other hand, I know that they used to criticize Litoměřice's beer. It's said that the brewing tradition that used to exist here was never all that great.
Já bych to neudělal taky.
Wine and beer traditions are, of course, just a footnote in Litoměřice's history. The town experienced periods of great social change and eventually upheaval. The 1400s and 1500s were largely marked by the Hussite movement, with much of the region backing the Protestants. But eventually, the defeat of Protestant forces at the Battle of White Mountain in 1620 at the beginning of the Thirty Years' War spelt the end of Czech autonomy and paved the way for brutal re-Catholicization of the Czech lands. Many loyal Protestants in Litoměřice, as elsewhere, were forced to depart.
The Hussite movement was always strong here, and the sanctions were strict. Even so, the first two Jesuits who came here were chased out by townsfolk carrying pitchforks. Following the Battle of White Mountain, some 200 families were forced to leave. They were given a choice, either go into exile or to convert. Property was seized. Many left their homes behind.
But Litoměřice itself survived, largely intact. The architecture in the historic center remains stunning, a beautiful panorama of spires on the hazy Elbe River, ramparts from the 13th century, its main square. A mix of burghers' houses rebuilt in the Renaissance and later Baroque styles. A courtyard on Jesuitska Street completely hides a twin-peaked Gothic church. Litoměřice was also heavily influenced by the Baroque, including the famous Jesuit Church of St. Stephen. Classicist Art Nouveau and later constructivist buildings follow. Without a doubt, a unique pleasure in visiting Litoměřice is just simply wandering the town's wider area, viewing private villas off the beaten path. I spoke with a couple tourists on a day trip from Prague.
I'm from Prague and I'm here just for one day to see the city. We have seen a square here, which is very beautiful, and some cellars, Gothic cellars, I think it was. Yeah.
We saw the square and now we're walking to the houses and buildings outside the city. What I like here that here are German houses and buildings. The houses here are beautiful.
In the distance, the nearby hillocks shimmer in the sunlight, the Dome Hill, Radobil, the site of the former vineyard. It was from those same slopes that in late October 1836, the great Czech romantic poet, Karel Hynek Mácha, saw part of Litoměřice on fire. In a letter to his parents and fiancée, he wrote,
"In the evening I was lying on Radobil, one of the high peaks behind Litoměřice. It was already dark, and flames appeared in Litoměřice. I saw it from that peak, so I ran down quickly. I had to run about 3/4 of an hour to get there, and I was still one of the first ones to the fire. 11 barns full of grain burst into flame, and the wind was blowing through them terribly. Such clarity and heat I've never seen in my life."
The poet and others cooperated together to fight the blaze, but that night he caught a chill that eventually led to his death, a month later, at just 27. Oldřich doskočil once again.
Právě z něho při svém posledním výletu spatřil velký český romantický básník Karel Hynek Mácha.
It was Mácha's last journey. On Radobil he saw the flames and rushed to help on the other side of town. He caught pneumonia, which eventually proved fatal. That was how the Czech's greatest romantic poet died.
Na to velice mlád umírá a byl pohřben na litoměřickém hřbitově.
Many thanks to Jan Wellinger for that edition of Spotlight, first broadcast in May of 2006. Now, as ever of a Saturday, it's time for another trip down memory lane, or rather through the halls of the Czech radio archives. Here's David Vaughan.
With Christmas just round the corner, we break our chronological journey through the archives this week to go back to Christmas 1945. We're in Krocehlavy, a suburb of the industrial town of Kladno near Prague. This was home to the survivors of one of the horrors of the wartime occupation, the murder in 1942 of all the men and most of the children of the nearby village of Lidice. Only one Lidice family had survived the massacre intact. Josef Horák was one of two young pilots from the village who had fled at the beginning of the occupation, and he spent the war serving in Britain's Royal Air Force. After the liberation, he moved straight back to Czechoslovakia with his English wife, Wynne, and their two small children. The family was a symbol of a new life for Lidice, and over Christmas 1945, Czechoslovak radio arranged a radio bridge to Britain from a Christmas party in the Horák's living room. Here is a slightly edited version of that broadcast.
Hello, Britain. We want you to join us at a very special Christmas party which is being given here in Krocehlavy, close to the martyred village of Lidice. In this house lives Josef Horák, one of the only two men who survived Lidice and who served during the war as squadron leader in the RAF. It is Josef Horák and his English wife and their two baby sons, Vašek and Josef, who are giving this party for the other Lidice children. And here in their sitting room, everything is ready for the fun to begin. There is a wonderful Christmas tree in the corner. The walls are hung with branches of fir tree and mistletoe. In the next room, the table is already laid. And in the kitchen over there is a real English plum pudding, specially flown over from London by friends in the RAF. Is everybody here now, Mr. Horak?
Yes, I think we are all here. You know, we are a bit afraid of this Christmas. We all live together here in Krotehlavy, so as not to feel so lonely, especially the women whose children have still not been found. We all try to help each other.
Pojďte se podívat na stromeček a na dárky.
Eva wants to play with her toys. All right, Eva, let's go over to the Christmas tree. Well, those children who are not playing Kolokolo Mlínský are now floating their little boats of light. It is one of our old Czech customs. A nutshell with a little candle each floating on a vast sea. Which boat will arrive safely at the other shore? Well, their little boats of life are safe now. And so are ours, let us hope. Well, what is it, Vašek dear?
Mommy, look at mine bow.
This is baby Horak speaking.
Yes, dear, it's a beautiful boat. But come over here, dear. We want you to say a few words into the microphone. What is the microphone? If you speak into it, people who are not in this room can hear you. Can many people hear me?
Very many. All the people in the great wide world.
Merry Christmas to you, big wide world.
And everlasting peace. And with this carol, Ligita sends Christmas greetings to all the freedom-loving peoples of the world.
Christmas in 1945 with the Horák family from Lidice. This story was not to have a happy ending. With the communist takeover just over a year later, the Horák family was ostracized because of its links with the West and bullied into leaving the country again. Josef Horák died in a flying accident in 1949, having rejoined the Royal Air Force. But his widow, Wyn, and their younger son, also Josef, are both still alive and well, and living in the English county of Wiltshire, where I wish them a very happy Christmas.
That was David Vaughan with From the Archives, wrapping up Radio Prague's English program for today. If you'd like to listen again or recommend the program to others, we are always on the internet for you. Simply turn to our website at radio.cz. We are always happy to discuss your questions and comments. You can write to us by email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or, of course, with a good old-fashioned letter to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening and nashledanou.
vous écoutez Radio Prague.